The following presentation is not suitable for young children. Listener discretion is advised. At 2:30 p.m. on Saturday, August 27, 2016, Hal Martin, a 51-year-old government contractor, drove home to the quiet Baltimore suburb of Glen Burnie, Maryland. He might have noticed the surprising number of government cars on his street, but he probably thought it was just one of his neighbors throwing a party. A lot of people who lived in this suburb, like him, had ties to the government. He got out of his teal Chevy Caprice and walked to his front door, when all of a sudden, 9 heavily armed SWAT team members ran towards him, rifles and guns drawn. "Get away from the door!" one yelled at him. He jumped in fear. "Show us your hands!" Confused, Martin raised his hands. What was this all about? The lead SWAT member, Special Agent Davis, ran to him and ordered Martin to get down on the ground. Then handcuffed him as he laid there, getting grass stains on his shorts and t-shirt. An agent pulled out a battering ram and started to slam it into Martin's front door, while another pulled the safety out of a flashbang grenade. It sounded like World War III had started. The boom could be heard houses away, and Maryland state troopers blocked the roads to stop people from getting in or out. 84-year-old neighbor Murray Bennett looked outside, and an agent yelled at him to get back in the damn house. The agents ransacked his house. At first, there was nothing. Then they went to the dusty shed out back and checked it. There wasn't even a lock on the door. And inside, the agents found what they were looking for. 50 terabytes of classified government files. Stolen information from the highest levels of government cybersecurity, including handwritten descriptions of NSA's computer networks and personal details about employees. Jackpot. Over the next 4 hours, agents searched the house and interrogated Martin as he sat on his couch. FBI Task Force Officer Brooke Donovan, dressed in plain clothes, asked about the classified files they'd found in the shed, but Martin shook his head. Those weren't his. Donovan leaned in and sneered. According to the sentencing document, Donovan said, "You can sit here and deny, 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 but the feeding game is over. All right? You're a bad man. There's no way around that." Martin, shaken, admitted that he'd taken files from his employer, the government contractor Booz Allen Hamilton, which had employed the whistleblower Edward Snowden a few years earlier. Donovan shared a smile with the other agents. They'd gotten their man. 2 weeks earlier, a mysterious cyber criminal group calling themselves the Shadow Brokers had started leaking some of the most powerful and secret NSA tools used by the government. Whoever was behind the leak was auctioning off secrets that could take down the entire government's spying operations. Inside Martin's shed, they'd found many of those same tools, which meant they'd found the man behind the Shadow Brokers. The government had saved the day. Hours later, they escorted him out of his house, still in shorts and a t-shirt. A neighbor, Don Dincher, 43, was worried. "He looks so pale." She thought he must have had a heart attack. "He looks scared to death." He was detained in a Maryland court and quickly moved behind bars without bail to await trial. At the NSA, they breathed a sigh of relief. Until 2 months later, on October 31st, when the Shadow Brokers released a message called Trick or Treat with a new update. This wasn't over. The Shadow Brokers were still out there. On this episode, secret government tools, ransomware, and one of the biggest unsolved hacks of all time. I'm Keith Korneluk, and you're listening to a very special bonus episode of Modem Mischief. You're listening to Modem Mischief. In this series, we explore the darkest reaches of the internet. We'll take you into the minds of the world's most notorious hackers and the lives affected by them. We'll also show you places you won't find on Google and what goes on down there. This is the story of the Shadow Brokers. The National Security Agency, or NSA, is the shadowy United States intelligence group whose very existence was classified for decades. Despite the fact that it's one of the biggest spy organizations in the world, precious little is known about what they do. Little, that is, until 2013, when a whistleblower working for the private NSA contractor, Booz Allen Hamilton, named Edward Snowden revealed some of what the NSA's been doing across the globe. Oh, and P.S., if you want to learn more about Edward Snowden, listen to episode 4 of Modem Mischief. Snowden leaked damning details from the secretive hacking group within the NSA known as Tailored Access Operations, or TAO. The TAO is one of the most secret parts of the mysterious agency. Nearly everything they do is classified at the highest levels, ECI, or Exceptionally Controlled Information. And now, the world knew exactly what they were doing. Snowden's leaks showed that TAO was spying using tools that let them break into virtually anyone's computer and mobile systems, both in America and abroad. The agency was implanting malware into devices across the world, stealing documents, changing the contents of emails, and launching cyber attacks against enemy powers. These revelations set off a shockwave across the government and press all over the world. Worse for the NSA's efforts at secrecy, a little under 2 years later, in 2015, a Russian cybersecurity firm called Kaspersky used the trail led by Snowden leaks to expose the existence of a group of hackers known as the Equation Group, who created the sophisticated cyber weapons the NSA had been using. They couldn't prove the Equation Group was connected to the NSA or the TAO, but it sure looked bad for the NSA. But within the NSA, there was a little sense of relief that, while the leaks were bad for them, at least Snowden and Kaspersky hadn't released any of the weapons themselves. They just told people that they existed. Then, just over 3 years later, on August 13, 2016, a cryptic message was put out by a Twitter account called @ShadowBrokers, or @ShadowBrokers with two S's at the end, and they contained the NSA's worst fears.
"Attention government sponsors of cyber warfare and those who profit from it,"
the message began.
"How much you pay for enemy cyber weapons?"
it continued in broken English.
"We hack Equation Group."
NSA security agents' stomachs dropped. Was this for real? They asked. Did someone steal the Equation Group's tools, the most advanced cyber weapons in the world? The message promised the tools would be sold to the highest bidder in a Bitcoin auction.
"If you want to know what we take, you send Bitcoin."
This looked bad for the agency. Maybe this is a prank, they told themselves. The hackers were asking for outrageous sums of money, upwards of 1 million bitcoins. But then, the NSA agents saw the attachments. To drum up business for the auction, the shadow brokers included a zip file with some Equation Group tools from 2013. These were the very weapons the NSA used to break into computer networks. This was the equivalent of releasing bombs into the wild. Most of the tools in this took advantage of vulnerabilities in computer networks that had since been patched. But it was still remarkably powerful hacking materials to be released for anyone to take. At the NSA, confusion started to turn into fear. How the hell did they get these? The message ended with a rambling warning. In broken English, it asked,
"If Equation Group lose control of cyber weapons, who else lose or find cyber weapons? Do you feel in charge? Wealthy elites, you send bitcoins, you bid an auction."
In the NSA headquarters at Fort Meade, chaos broke out. They had to find out what was happening. What all did the brokers have? How did they get them? And who were the shadow brokers? If anyone on the team played video games, they'd have at least some idea.
"It's pointless to challenge me, Asari. I know your every secret while you fumble in the dark."
The 2007 video game Mass Effect introduced a villainous character known as the Shadow Broker, who could provide any information in the galaxy for a price. In the game, the Shadow Broker controlled a vast spy network that bought and sold information for profit, regardless of morals. Were these Shadow Brokers like this, and just in it for the money? Or were they working for the government? And while what they released was scary, none of it was that bad. Yet. In August of 2016, a mysterious group calling itself the Shadow Brokers began to auction off some of the most powerful cyber weapons in the world. Malware developed for the NSA that could be used to infiltrate computer systems from banks to power plants to everyday computers. Among the cybersecurity world, the 2016 leak was looking downright catastrophic. The NSA had to find out who leaked, and to stop them before they sold the more dangerous weapons to people who would abuse them. Across the world in Moscow, researchers at the cybersecurity firm Kaspersky were flummoxed too. Kaspersky had originally exposed the very existence of the Equation Group, the developers of those weapons, back in 2015, and had spent years trying to counter the NSA. They weren't friends with the US agency, to put it mildly. But just 30 minutes before the shadow brokers began their auction, a researcher for Kaspersky received a mysterious Twitter message request from user Hal9999999999, as in nine nines, asking to talk to their CEO, Yevgeny Kaspersky. There were no details, just the mysterious warning. Shelf life, 3 weeks. For 3 days, the messages sat unread in the inbox because the researcher was on vacation. It was August, after all, and even Moscow can get hot. But when they came back from vacation, slightly tanned from the time on the beach resorts of the Black Sea, they found the entire cybersecurity world in chaos. And these mysterious messages, could they somehow be related? The Kaspersky group was intrigued. The HAL99 account's profile picture was an image spelling out TAO, or Tailored Access Operations, the very group who'd been hacked. The Kaspersky researcher asked for proof, but whoever HAL99 was blocked them, and the trail went cold. Or it would have been until 2 days later, when the same account sent three messages to a different Kaspersky researcher. Still considering it, the user wrote at 3:30 in the morning Moscow time, or 11:30 East Coast, the mysterious HAL user compared themselves to Jason Bourne, then sent a clip from the end of Inception. They couldn't be sure what was real or not. Who was this HAL with nine nines at the end of their Twitter handle? Did he think of himself as some sort of secret agent like Jason Bourne? Not sure what is real and what isn't, like in Christopher Nolan's Inception? And most of all, if he didn't want to be ID'd, why did he reach out to cybersecurity experts? Because within the day, the Kaspersky researchers linked his Twitter profile to an anonymous BDSM website looking for sex that included a picture and a location. A 6-foot-tall, middle-aged man in Annapolis, Maryland. Using the picture and location, they found their mysterious user's real name, Hal Martin, a 51-year-old government contractor who worked with the NSA. So on August 22, 2016, Kaspersky passed along all their info about Martin. Inside the NSA headquarters, this looked like their very first lead. Someone like government contractor Hal Martin had access to a lot of sources for the stolen materials. He even worked for the same exact consulting company that had employed whistleblower Edward Snowden. The NSA was intrigued, but would need more proof than just a tip from a Russian company. So on August 25th, the FBI got a warrant for his Twitter account, where they found exactly what Kaspersky had told them. They reviewed his NSA files, and they started to sweat. This man was a prime security risk. So on August 27th, they sent a SWAT team to search his home. Inside Hal Martin's home, the FBI found over 50 terabytes of NSA materials, including many of the same tools that the shadow brokers had been leaking. This was it. They'd found their leaker. Hal Martin in custody, the NSA had to be thinking they'd weathered the storm. After the arrest, the shadow brokers went silent for a few weeks, and when they came back, they posted a message quoting from Team America, World Police. A few weeks later, they tweeted out, "Big leak," but all they had was just a comedy sketch about former President Bill Clinton having sex with then-current U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch. They didn't seem to have anything further damaging. Martin was arraigned, and while his lawyer suggested he was simply a hoarder with a bad work-from-home habit, he was sentenced to 9 years in prison. They couldn't prove he was the source of the shadow broker's leaks, but it sure looked like they'd caught their man. Even if there were other people working for the group, the NSA could rest easy that they'd plugged the leak. That is, until Halloween 2016. The shadow brokers released a new message, and at first, it seemed like just the others.
"The shadow brokers is having a special trick-or-treat for the Amerikanskis tonight,"
it began, and then they included something that had to make the NSA sweat, a list of 7 tools from the Equation Group that no one had ever heard before. along with a list of servers all over the world currently compromised by them. The shadow brokers were still out there and had even more cyber weapons. And worse for the NSA, they had no leads left, and their only suspect couldn't have done it. The shadow brokers had leaked some of the most dangerous cyber weapons in the history of the internet. Tools that could control computers from a distance, change the text in an email, or spoof bank credentials. This shadowy group had shown that they not only knew what weapons the NSA was using, but also where they were operating. By leaking servers the Equation Group was operating on, the brokers had slammed shut the electronic doors the NSA relied on to spy on their rivals. And worse, they weren't done. The shadow brokers released more files that exploited different systems every month. They weren't done. And it was clear that the NSA had to fix its problem fast before the group released some of the truly dangerous weapons they might have. Inside the NSA headquarters in Fort Meade, Maryland, panic set in. The agency began grilling its employees. Any of the hundreds of people who came through the doors every day could have swiped information on a thumb drive and leaked it. Across the cybersecurity world, people tried to theorize who could be behind the leaks. Jake Williams, the founder of the private cybersecurity firm Rendition InfoSec, wrote on his company blog about the shadow brokers' leaks and tried to use this as a case study in securing information as a sort of academic exercise. He was curious, but not scared. That is, until April 2017, 8 months after the initial leaks, when Jake was in Orlando leading a training session. He got a call.
"Have you seen Twitter?"
He logged in. The shadow brokers had read his blog post. They tweeted about him, mocking him as a former Tau agent. Information which was true, but top secret, and he hadn't worked there for years. How did they get this? He asked himself, his fingers tapping nervously on the mouse. And it got worse. In a series of tweets, they called out specific operations he'd been involved in with the Tau. "Are they watching me?" he wondered, looking around and shutting his laptop reflexively. He canceled trips abroad and stopped writing about them online. Whoever the shadow brokers were, they had access to some of the most classified information the NSA had. The identity of the shadow brokers was now the million Bitcoin question. The communiques were written in broken English that sounded like Russian, but their messages also used jokes that looked like they came from a native English speaker. Or at the very least, someone who consumed a lot of American pop culture. But over the months, no one paid for their auction. It seemed like the world might escape those weapons being released out into the wild. That is until April, right around when they mocked Jake Williams. Right after the American government bombed a Russian military base in Syria, the shadow brokers released their most damaging leak yet, in a post titled, "Lost in Translation."
"The shadow brokers be thinking, fuck peoples,"
they wrote in a terse message. They were done with the auction. All they wanted now was to take money. Shadow brokers wrote that it was too bad nobody decided to just pay them to shut up and go away, since they'd rather just be getting drunk with cyber legend John McAfee on a desert island with hot babes. And not to beat a dead horse here, but there's a full episode of John McAfee coming on January 26th, wherever you get your podcasts. They signed off by saying,
"Maybe if all surviving World War III, the shadow brokers be seeing you next week."
Attached was the equivalent of a tactical nuclear weapon. Exploits that would take over Windows machines with a snap of a finger, including one called Eternal Blue. There was a vulnerability in the Microsoft Windows operating system that let remote users take control of the computer if they went in the right way with the right tools. The NSA had known about the weakness in Windows for years, but instead of telling Microsoft, they developed Eternal Blue to be that very tool. And now, Eternal Blue was out in the world. Anyone could download it and attack Windows machines. Microsoft had put out a patch for that very vulnerability a month before, maybe finally tipped off by the NSA, who knew their weapon could be leaked. But there were millions of computers out there that hadn't updated. The shadow brokers warned of World War III, and in terms of cyber warfare, they had just given everyone nuclear weapons. Over the next few months, the shadow brokers released even more NSA weapons that targeted Linux machines and Android phones. If you were a nefarious hacker, you now had some of the most powerful tools in the world to play with. In April of 2017, the mysterious shadow brokers had released cyber weapons that could take down nearly any computer in the world. And less than 1 month later, hackers took advantage of it. On May 12, 2017, at 12:42 p.m., a user in Southeast Asia tried to log into their computer, but couldn't. "Oops," a message flashed on their computer. "Your important files are encrypted. If you don't pay in 7 days, you won't be able to recover your files forever." What the hell? The user called their internet service provider. They couldn't access their computers either. The ISP's board lit up. Hundreds, then thousands of computers became infected. Like a biological virus, any vulnerable Microsoft Windows computer attached via a network to an infected computer was infected in turn. Within hours, the malware had spread to hundreds of thousands of computers across the globe. Any Windows machine that hadn't downloaded the security update was vulnerable to the Eternal Blue hack. Within hours, the attack had been dubbed the WannaCry hack. It didn't seem to come from the shadow brokers. For one thing, their Twitter was quiet during it, but it used the weapons leaked by them. It took down Spain's Telefónica phone network, and after infecting Britain's national health system, forced hundreds of ambulances to be rerouted, life-saving operations to be delayed, and patient information to go offline. This was a doomsday scenario, and it couldn't be stopped. It would lead to people dying. 22-year-old Marcus Hutchins, better known by his handle MalwareTech, was a hacker living on the coast of rural England. As a teenager, he developed malware of his own. While struggling with a drug addiction and run-ins with the law, more comfortable in the world of science fiction than reality. Now sober and working for a cybersecurity company, he watched the WannaCry attack spread and felt like he had to do something. So, working from his bedroom at his parents' house, he started poking around WannaCry and noticed that the code checked a specific website. This was a weakness, one spot that could take down the whole virus. The same way Luke Skywalker took down the Death Star by targeting a thermal exhaust port.
"You're all clear, kid, now let's blow this thing and go home."
He realized that the website the hack checked wasn't registered. This was his way in. He registered that website's domain for himself and created a kill switch. Now, anytime an infected computer went to check the site, it would shut down the virus. 8 hours after the attacks began, he was able to stop the hacks. The world had been saved, but for how long? And would there be a kill switch in the next version of this attack? The US government blamed North Korean security for the WannaCry attack, and following the close call, most systems administrators updated their computer networks to be safe from further attacks. But in June of that year, a similar malware known as NotPetya, also using the shadow broker's Eternal Blue leak, targeted the National Bank of the Ukraine. The world was on notice. The weapons released by the shadow brokers were being used. And after having dropped these metaphorical bombs, the shadow brokers just seemed to disappear. On October 16, 2017, just over 1 year after starting, they posted one last message.
"Is NSA chasing shadows is?"
With a wink and a nod to people who made guesses about who they were, they signed off simply as the Shadow Brokers, Brokers of Shadows. Since then, their Twitter account went offline, and there have been no further leaks. While no one's officially taken credit or been charged, U.S. intelligence agencies have let it known they're pretty sure the shadow brokers worked with the Russian government. Were they working for a state hacking service like Russia or North Korea? Could they have just been money-hungry, like real-life James Bond villains? Maybe they were rogue NSA agents. But one thing's for sure, the weapons they leaked have been used in ransomware attacks across the world. And there are still tens of thousands of aging computers out there that power our electrical grids, hospitals, courts, and more that haven't been updated in years. and any of them might be the next target of weapons leaked by the Shadow Brokers. I'm Keith Korneluk, and you're listening to Modem Mischief. Thanks for listening to this bonus episode of Modem Mischief. Your support keeps this show, which is an independent production, in business and turning out these episodes. And we're grateful as all hell for you. Modem Mischief is brought to you by Mad Dragon Productions and is created, produced, and hosted by me, Keith Korneluk. This episode is written and researched by David Burgess. Mixed and mastered by David Swope, a.k.a. Havid. I didn't go to stinking Havid. The theme song You Are Digital is composed by Computer Bandit. For more information about the show, go to modemmischief.com. And don't forget to follow us on social media at Modem Mischief. Thanks for listening.